Let's start in with discussion immediately, where you respond to some of these three or four liners. Go ahead.
I wasn't clear on page six, the first question, the first statement. Most older people are married and live with their spouses in separate households. Less than 10% have never married, 2% have divorced. I
put a question mark by that, and I really...
Oh, here, my wife just says not living with their children. Is that what that separate means?
Sure, I don't think it means the husband and the girls and one person.
Okay, separate households from their family, I guess, then. I missed it when I read it.
Most older people are married and live with their spouses in separate households.
They have their own house.
They have their own house,
their own apartment,
their own place to live.
But that contradicts some things in my head, that where there are figures that fly around like 60% of women past 60, 50% of women past 60 are probably living by themselves for one reason or another. So I, in my going through all these statements, which on the whole are pretty accurate from what I know, that's the one I put a question mark by and said, I don't understand that. I guess they're trying to say that the life of older people, especially from 65 to 75 in our time, is pretty normal. It's like most of the rest of us live. It isn't only 5% live in nursing homes or things like that. This contradicts some, seems to, in my mind, to contradict some other data about a lot of people having to live by themselves after, because of widowhood and so on. Yeah?
Number six, most older people claim that their personal relationships with young people are good.
Which?
Number six on the first page.
Most older people claim that they're personal. They underline personal for some reason. Relationships with young people are good. But they tend to feel that in general, young people dislike and avoid the old. So they're... my guess is that what they're meaning is that most older people know some younger people, like members of their family, young people who live across the street that they've developed a relationship with, but in general, they have a feeling like young people don't know what to do with them. Any reflections on your own experience in one way or another about this? About any of these? Yeah.
I would just say that I would agree with the statement from the standpoint of looking at my own relationship with my parents, you know, and that, you know, we've been with each other through the whole process, and we have a very close personal relationship that withstands the aging. And I don't look at them specifically as being older.
Yeah.
But in relationship to other people that are older, there are ideas that I have about older people that sometimes get in the way. It makes it more difficult than what to do.
And to the quote youth movement in the country, never trust anyone over 30, and never trust anyone over 21, or the kids should vote, the older people shouldn't be quiet.
Or old people are simply out of date.
Right, if it's not new, it's no good.
Yeah.
That's generally wrong. I would say it's wrong.
And the whole business that many old people, many people who are old right now were socialized in different cultures. And they, all their life, have been being different in many ways than the American stuff, the American culture, dominant American culture right now. The older people didn't grow up with the Beatles.
I disagree with what this gentleman said. I'm up here.
Yeah.
That may have been true several years ago, but I think more and more young people today are turning to old people to learn a different lifestyle. You know, we've lost a lot of the ways to provide for ourselves, and a lot of yet older people have that knowledge in their heads, and they can provide young people with that.
All right, this is the way I'd like this discussion to go, as people try out their images of what's happening with each other here. People provide different data. There's a piece of data right there from one person saying, no, that's not true about me. I look to the older people for their wisdom, for their experience, like young people in many cultures have done in the past. And I find that a satisfying way to be, so don't count me in the image, the generalization that young people turn away from old people's ideas. Yeah, yeah.
I was particularly interested in this because we had a series of adult discussions at our church, and we had representatives from various nursing homes, and I was particularly impressed with this young girl who came in to say that she was specializing in geriatrics and that there were many young people going in who will be working in the nursing homes and who will be working with the old elderly. And this was very inspiring. Yeah.
That ties in with the whole business that there is such a thing called gerontology, just beginning, really. A few universities are putting these programs into effect. People are specifically training to work in this area. There might even be one or two doctors trying to think about what's different about dealing with old people and so on. And little by little, as we become aware that there are a lot more old people, and that there's a slightly different ball game going on with that, a new discipline, a new awareness is coming, and that's part of what I'm trying to be part of with these sessions with you. Yeah.
I had meant to finish.
Okay.
Older people, anyone is immensely stimulating. And the longer people, the more they know, and the more they can tell you. My grandfather lived to be 100 years old. He started life, he drove a lumber wagon. When I learned how to drive a car, he gave me very good advice. It was in his 80s when he did it.
Yeah, For my own self, I think talking with somebody who was like my wife's mother, who was born in 1888, is an adventure, because a person born at that time has lived through so many changes on the face of this globe that any sense you can pick up of what life was like in the 1890s, which she can tell you a little bit sometimes on her good days, is worth the any effort you may put into it, like talking loud. Yes.
Yes, I'm really here because I have a father who, in the last 3 years, to me has just aged tremendously, and it looks like to me that it comes out of a decision or an idea that he has about being older, and I find it difficult to really cope with that. You know, and seeing the process going on. You know, it's like physically I've seen an enormous change in him, but it seems to me that it came out of this mental thing. And it began, you know, when my mother died, and, you know, the process seemed to be started there. But I have experienced a tremendous frustration because I care for him and seeing him do this. And it's hard to just let go and say, you know, well, this is the way it's going to be for him. I'd really like to hear from some of the people here who may be able to support me in supporting him.
May I say that probably he doesn't feel needed?
Possibly.
Because if you reach that point where you don't feel needed, you immediately go downhill.
You know, one of the neat things that my dad is doing, and we have a number of people at home now, young people growing up. I'd asked my dad about putting down his life with a tape recorder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a tape recorder is difficult for him. You know, that's basically something new, but he's writing it. My wife being teaching typing and a number of those courses, the idea that she's going to probably type it then and give us something, I think has meant a lot to my, first of all, it means a lot to me to have it, but I think it means a lot to him. And okay, we come out of a Danish background. Well, he's proud of his Danish heritage. He's going to be able to pass that on. And I think that getting them to converse with you, whether you sit there with a tape recorder, or to get them to put it down, if they can physically write it down, that they feel they're still doing something mm-hmm. that they'll leave behind. We're even doing a deal, when you talked about your parents, we have a man back home that's 98 and is still very active speaking and tremendously interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Our high school is videotaping. I mean, we got such great technology, videotaping him talking to service clubs and places to capture. You know, here's a guy that was playing in the rocks when the Indians went by. And it is, it's exciting. But I think if we can capture that, we're doing ourselves and our generations to follow our great service, plus we're doing something to our parents or friends.
All right, that's a, I'm willing to contract with you to focus on your father's situation, first of all, because it's a real live person that you've offered us to work on, and I think it's a fairly typical one that lots of us can learn of. So I want to honor your request from the group that we focus our responses, our thoughts for a little while on what you're trying to deal with. And I hear your response at this point going something like, anything you can do from members of the family, from people who kind of hook in with your comment, to invite your father to find his place as somebody who provides a source of history, a source of meaning, a source of wisdom, as it were, for the family, which is a tough thing for us to develop in our youth culture time. Eric Erickson says that the chief accomplishment of the integrity versus despair crisis of life is the accomplishment of wisdom, which is the old person's gift to the rest of us, a kind of lived set of meanings that tell the rest of us where we're going, because we're going to get that old. And if for somebody who is as spectacular as 98 years old and saw the Indians, that's one thing. But maybe this man is 58 and doesn't have a whole lot of stories to tell that are meaningful to the whole community. But maybe you and your family and other people really would like to know lots of things about your father's life. My mother died 4 months ago. After the funeral, I said, you know, I've never really, my father died 18 years ago. I sat down and a regret was I never asked them how they met the first time. I don't know that. And that's a gap. You know, I'd really like to know, you know, what they could tell me, how they got together. But in the various preoccupations of life, I never did that. And that would have been good for me and also probably been good for her. Okay, we're continuing to focus on this 3 years. Your mother died, your father is sort of... Okay.
I was just going to say, on basis of that, I was handling a client recently that he is 92 and she was
90. Who's 92?
Was a client.
Okay.
This couple were married, you know, they're still married, and both, you know, 90 and 92, and were selling their home, and the son was there, because, you know, at that age, you like for someone else in the family to be there. And it was really interesting. I set time letting them tell me about their home and the place and everything they could leave, and where they jot down a few things that happened there that would be interesting to the new people. They were so thrilled about it. They really didn't want to do it. And in the process, I also asked them how they first met. Their children did not know that. And that was so interesting what you said. They are now writing
about, because when they realized they didn't know that, they realized they didn't know a lot of other things. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're writing down these things now, and it's really it was just fun. It's fun. They've let us read them too, but it's been a fantastic awakening. Like, she was sick at the time. She's been terrific for the last 3 or 4 weeks. It was good.
Maybe you give him something very definite, like his genealogy.
Yeah.
And that's something to really leave your family.
Back in the back row.
A little louder. Many old people do not feel needed, but there could be also a way out from this if they were encouraged or shown how to get involved in the volunteer work. And some of them would really flourish in it and feel so happy by serving others. And sometimes I think for many people, they don't know what to do, they don't really know how to spend the day.
Yeah.
And yet if there was something that they could do, it would be helpful to society and increase their strength and happiness.
Yeah, if the point is that your father lost the focusing relationship of his life, the relationship that gave him a lot of, gave him an agenda for low many years. Now, it's been a long time since he started into the process of starting a new relationship, a new career, so to speak. And you deal with that partly by providing a set of people, some jobs, a place for a person to get involved. And even more than that, sometimes you have to have you or somebody kind of gently facilitate him into this new relationship. Maybe help him deal with the grief. He's probably still dealing with grief. I would guess very much so. And part of the grief process is to sort of finish with one relationship and open up the possibility of relating to somebody else, maybe one person or maybe several people. And learn the art of being art of companionship again. A very important thing that gerontologists tell us is that the person learns to find companions and to use them. Otherwise, you do go down. The loneliness gets to you. The depression gets at you.
Yeah, I see. I think some of the things that you might be experiencing are some things that I've been noticing in both my parents over the last few years too. My dad. Seems to be quite concerned, not in a morbid sense, but he's quite concerned about his gravesite, which he's purchased, and a lot of things like that, making sure things are in order financially and all that sort of stuff. And it kind of makes me think back to some reflections I had prior to my grandfather's death. My grandfather for years had talked about going across the alley, which was in the back of his house, to visit the funeral home, which was across the alley, and that was his way of talking about the fact that he was going to die, and he was ready to do that. And then, but he didn't want to die at home, I mean, not in a hospital, and that was one thing that he had said quite clearly. But I remember several times, I remember them quite clearly, visiting with him when he was ill, lying in a bed, which had been kind of set up in the dining room of the house, because he couldn't make the stairs to his bedroom. And witnessing my aunts and getting caught up in it myself, you know, saying, well, Grandpa, you're gonna get better, you're not gonna, you know, he was dying from emphysema and this whole thing, and he was saying he was ready to die, but there was a kind of a thing that was going on with my aunts, and I remember getting caught up in it too, that, you know, you're gonna get over this and you're gonna get better, and it's, you know, the emphysema, well, it's not gonna get you. And as I'm thinking about this now kind of happening with my father, I see it as being a kind of a healthy thing, and that it allows, and having reflected back on my grandfather's experience, it allows for some of the tender moments to say the I love yous and that kind of thing. And I wish I hadn't got caught up in the denial of the death of my grandfather, and I wish I'd have said some things to him like, thanks for, you know, passing on to me your love of the earth. He was a farmer. And your sense of humor and that kind of stuff. And I wish I could go back and recapture that. It's gone with my grandfather, but I see the sort of thing developing with my dad now and my mother in that sense, and I think I've learned some things from the past.
Yeah, there are two things here that are very important in for me to among many that could get done in this session. One is the stuff about image that you brought up. And two, the business about if this session jogs you to go back home to do something for somebody who is somewhere in this old age business, whether it's your parents or whoever, that maybe you go do it. Because you might not have the chance. Yesterday I quoted Ann Landers, today, equal time, Dear Abby. Yesterday was the saddest day of my life. I buried my mother. And now many thoughts come to mind that make me even sadder. I recall the many times I meant to call her and ask her if there was anything she needed, but I seldom got around to it. I recall the day I ran into Mom in the bakery. Her winter coat looked so shabby and worn, and I thought, gee, I've got to take Mom downtown and buy her a new coat. But I never found the time. I was too busy. On her last birthday, I sent her in an azalea plant, but I forgot to enclose a card. I'd wanted to get over to see her, but there was a football game that day, so I never made it. The last time I saw Mom was at my cousin's wedding. She looked so old and tired. I told myself I must send Mom to Florida to visit her brother and get a little son. But I just never got around to buying the tickets. If only I could turn the clock back, I'd buy Mom that coat and spend every birthday with her and take her any place she wanted to go. But it's too late now, and I'm heartsick. Please print this letter. Maybe if I've seen one like it, I would have done things differently. Grieving son. She doesn't respond to him. I don't know why. Anyway, there's that one, and you know that is there's certainly there are sometimes things that where we have to decide our priorities, and sometimes we have to let old people struggle as they have in the past, and sometimes they have a lot of strength. But if you're like this person who said, yeah, I want to do this, but never quite finished the process of doing it or deciding what he was going to do, I think that's a lousy place to be. So work through your priorities here and work and maybe discuss them with your parents or whoever is involved. The second thing is this stuff about image. You mentioned when you brought up the thing about your father that he seemed to be living out an image that when you're old, this is what happens to you. And I think that's a very powerful thing. We tend to live out as self-fulfilling prophecies pictures of what people tell us is happening to us. Much of the image of aging in our time is based on the biological one the gerontologists tell us, and that means you're going downhill.
You think the emphasis on youth has done that?
That's part of it. It has to do with the whole collection of values in our culture. There are other cultures who say, I can't wait till I get old because then I'll really be able to be the wise man.
Philosopher King.
Yeah. I'm looking for, I'm, wow, what, how great to be old. You really get honored. And the whole structure of society leads up to the honored place for the old. Now, that's one way of looking at it. There are many things that go into this business of images of aging. People say there are two main theories of what happened to you when you age. One is psychologically. One is you sort of either hold on or change your pace a little bit, but you keep on going. You know, the activity theory of aging, and the more activities you can do, the more hobbies you can do, the happier you're going to be. This is the happy land, Sun City, etc. kind of picture of aging. And I think there are a lot of young old today where that fits quite a bit. there are some people who have been looking forward to getting out of the rat race for 90 years, 40, 1,000 years. And finally they got a chance to do that, and they are sitting in their chair and they say, wow, this is what I've been looking for all my life. I'm disengaging. Bye, folks. I might look at the ball game once in a while, but don't bother me anymore. And they really mean it, and they pull it off. It is clear that life with its when you lose your husband, lose your friends. My wife's mother has been reporting to us deaths of friends and relatives for the last 30 years, and how she keeps on with all this disengagement, I don't know, but she keeps doing it. It's sort of an inevitable kind of thing that things slip away, fall away, and you learn to deal with less and to get fulfilled with, or semi-fulfilled, I guess, with less. And it is kind of exhausting to live the life of young and middle age, so it'd be nice, it is nice to kind of contemplate. Yeah?
Yes. One of the things, too, that I noticed tied in with what you were saying about completing a relationship, and that my father and mother never really faced the issue of her dying.
Yeah.
Whereas she and I did, and it was really an incredible experience, you know, that her dying was a joy. But what I saw when they didn't complete it was there was an anger underlying the grief with my father that he's never really been able to, you know, acknowledge. And so that seems to be, the grief covers it over. And I think the anger really is the issue that's his way of paying back the world. Because see, we have really wanted him to participate in our lives and have encouraged him in almost every way that I can think of. And it's like now he won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Oh, sure.
And that's my frustration, you know, in that we really love him and want him to have everything that he could possibly have. And now he's decided, uh-uh. So I think a little bit underneath of that was the tie-in with them.
Yeah.
I
think unresolved grief is probably a big factor in a lot of older people's lives. And anger is a large part of that.
Yeah.
And getting stuck sort of is a large part of that. All I know to deal with that is to have somebody who cares hang in there and prod the person to get into the grief, even though it feels so... so out of date 3 years ago, 10, 20 years ago, whatever.
It still comes up.
Yeah. And there's so many things that old people lose. There are so many things that you grieve over. That job you had for 40 years, that house, that place in the community, there's so many, that cat who died after 17 years, there's so many things, there's so many losses, which when you add them up, add up to a lot of stress. And to realize that being old involves the stress of loss is probably another thing for somebody, whether you're in the thing yourself or a friend or relative of somebody who is old, to realize that that's there and figure out a strategy to handle it, bring it out in the open, and offer some sort of support in it to fill it out. You're next.
I've worked a lot with older people. I'm a nurse, and I've worked in nursing homes and hospitals, and I think that many times families are afraid to talk to the family about these things, and they come in, and if they do come in at all, they talk about what a nice day it is, and Johnny hit a home run,
mm-hmm.
and this and that and the other thing. And then after they leave, and I go in, I see the tears running
yeah.
down their face, and I want to talk about that I'm dying. I want to talk about these concerns, but they aren't interested at all. And it's really sad. And then later on, I go talk to the families, and they. Oh, well, we're not aware of this. We didn't even know that he knew he was dying or whatever. You know, there's just a complete lack of any kind of communication. And although, you know, family might feel uncomfortable about discussing it with us, sometimes these people really have a need to talk about their fears and hopes and expectations and joys. And I remember this, this one nursing home I had worked at, they told the staff to treat these people with the greatest respect and treat each one as if with the respect that you would give your own grandparent and so on. And it really made a lot of difference. And I know sometimes these people who were just left to sit, if I would spend a lot of time just talking with them and finding out what their interests were and learning about them, yeah. And then building on their own interests, maybe we could find not just something to whittle away the time, but something that they could be of use and contribute still.
That person, that old person, is a real live adventure. That's a story. That's very interesting once you get into it. That's not a child that you kind of pat on the head. That's you with some earplugs and distorted glasses. You sometimes pretend that you're old. Get glasses that make your mess up your vision a little bit. Slightly diminish your hearing. Put some bandages around your knees so you can't walk very well. Do a few other little things, and then start to live. And then you'll find out what you might be heading into, and what people you're dealing with are heading into. And you realize that inside those impairments, you are as much a vibrant historical being as you ever were, and you crave people to know you as you are, to respect your opinion as a full-fledged adult, and so on. I could go on and on.
I know there was one patient that really was sort of the turning point to me. He was a stroke patient who didn't respond to much of anything except pinching the nurses and so on. And all of us got a rather bad opinion of him. And one day, I looked at his chart, and this man had been a concert violinist with the Minneapolis Symphony. And I thought, wow, what am I doing to these old people? They just aren't room 204 or whatever. These are people who, when they were young, were wading through streams and swinging on swings and walking to school, who had a crush on a boy or a girl, and they fell in love and married and raised children and spanked them when they had to be, and have the same frustrations as I feel now. And it just made a whole world of difference that, these were human beings with feelings, just as I have feelings. And I think that made all the difference in the world to me. And after that, I looked at older people with much more respect and wisdom.
Well, those three comments, and then we're going to switch gears. Yes.
Could I pose a question to her?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that there are many in the nursing homes, for instance, that really physically really don't need to be there?
There are some. I think our town that we come from is putting up a building for senior citizens where they have at least one meal a day in a common dining room. They are going to have a nurse on duty, and where they can get their medications or medical attention if they need it. This kind of thing. There are some patients, that are put in a nursing home who could function very well in this type of setting. Others couldn't. I don't think so many times nursing homes have this bad connotation, that they are terrible places to be in, but they can be very creative. They can be good experiences too. I think you have to check them out thoroughly before you put anyone in, but I think there are some who would survive or live very well in a different type of
if they had,
if they're available.
Yeah, if there were a service, some basic services to come into the home or apartment to help them deal with some things that they couldn't quite manage by themselves, there are a lot of, I think a lot of people wouldn't need to be institutionalized.
I think one big thing is the eating.
Yeah.
And I know my great aunt, the year I was born, was a while ago, her husband died, and she had no children or whatever, and she's been eating a little bit out of a frying pan, and that's how she's existed all these years. And it's not pleasant to cook just for yourself and not have anyone to talk to, and so they miss a lot of the nutrition, and that's why some of these places stress having at least one good nourishing meal. Another thing that's available are these home health aids that come in,
yep.
Meals on
yep.
Wheels.
Yep.
People can live in their homes and function quite well on this.
One of the best things and the focus of a lot of life, it was for my mother last 3 years of her life, was these nutrition centers that have come into being recently all over this country, small towns and big cities and so on. And a lot of people are still discovering that they exist. And you get a great meal there and a great time to meet people your age. One of the best things, one of the better programs I've seen our legislation turn out in recent times.
Don't you think we've come a long way on the aging?
I think some progress has been made, but there are some people who say there's a long ways to go yet, baby.
Mm-hmm.
The assumptions like that all their health costs are taken care of by Medicare. No. You probably have people here tell you all kinds of terrible tales about that one. Yeah.
Well, everybody seems to think it's real bad to get old. I haven't heard anybody say there's something very good about it. I wouldn't want to go back over the years I've gone over, and there's something to look ahead to. Of course, good health has a lot to do with that, but, and just think what you have that you didn't have when you were young.
Yeah.
I don't want to
yeah.
go back.
I don't think
yeah,
there,
and I think that's everybody, when they get old, that some things slow down, you have to take things a little easy, and so on. But on the whole, most old people are in pretty good shape. And that's an important image for all of us to keep in mind.
That's what you're looking ahead to.
Yep.
It's first if you get so incapacitated you can't get out,
yeah.
And then you sit hour upon hour
yeah.
alone in
yeah.
your apartment or room or whatever, and then you need somebody who will come in and just simply talk with you.
Yeah. Yep.
I know I had an uncle who delivered meals on wheels, and he was so delayed all the time because they wanted to
yeah.
talk.
Right, absolutely.
Don't we have one of the problems of talking about that and bringing up the nursing home and so forth? It seems to be such a negative connotation about older people going to, you even said it yourself, being institutionalized. And I think that's a very negative word.
Mm-hmm. It is, but
and
that's what they are.
Well, I don't agree that we have to look at it that way. I think our whole society is moving towards more of a communal living pattern in all ages. And I think that it would be healthier if we could begin to change attitudes among older people about the fact that they shouldn't maybe live in that big house by themselves or in an apartment by themselves. That it's poor use of resources and energy, for one thing. And that probably the opportunity of living in a communal setting is going to be healthier for them, it's going to be better for them, and it's a positive experience. But we don't get that message across. One of the things you hear from older folks, and I hear it all the time, you know, is I'm going to hang on here, and I'm going to stay in my own house, and I'm not going to go to that place where it's the final stopping point.
Because the alternatives are very narrow for them. Either stay where I am or lose everything.
But that's reality.
Well, I think there are lots of things in between, and if together we work on the alternatives for each individual old person, some compromises can be worked out when the person can keep some of his past history, keep some of the things that are precious, keep the kind of space he or she likes or they like, rather than lose every last bit of it and have their lifestyle change entirely.
Yeah.
discuss
that. One thing in Southern California that's popping up a lot, at least we have three of them in our, just in a, you should say in a 12-mile radius, is retirement hotels or retirement apartments. Now there they have one or two rooms, you can have either.
Mm-hmm.
They have a common kitchen facility that can be used, you know, at times. I mean, there are several stoves in one place. There's several sinks and places they can fix things from time to time. They can bring their own furniture. They can have it furnished or unfurnished. So it's like an apartment. It's like a new apartment. There's a doctor on call. There's nurses. There's, like I said, so many meals available to them. Quite frankly, they're having fun. They look forward to seeing one another. They develop relationships. There's a social program there. My goodness, it's fun.
Yeah, that's
I wish I could go stay a couple
That's days. One of the alternatives I have in mind. Although I am uneasy about putting the old people in our culture over there, and the middle age over there, and so on, and so on.
No, they do things for youth. They work with the YMCA, so, they go out and they do projects for young people. Young
Super.
People come in and do things too, but there's a lot of interaction.
Yeah.
I think that's very helpful.
One more hand here, and then I want to start to move to other things.
Your conversation refers back to me. I just sold my home recently. I lived alone for 10 years. And now they come along with this housing for the elderly. Now, I had friends that were going, but I didn't think I wanted to go. I thought, well, that's for the handicapped. But they said, oh, come on along with us. So it's on the other end of town, and we were always together. So I thought, well, I'll go and sign up. I'll never get in there. But I got notice, and I had to hurry up and sell my home, and I did everything in a hurry, and I haven't had 1 minute of regret. I love every bit of it. It's real living for old people. You're never lonely. You never have to be lonely.
I think that a gerontologist that I heard recently said that there are some inevitable changes that are going to have to be done in many ways in our lives, of our lives and the lives of old people. But the tendency is that we start to come at old people and say, you got to do this, and this is what we figured out that you're going to do. Maybe you can sit down with the person involved, the people involved, and say, this is the problem. This is the thing that's getting us. We got to do something. What are we going to do? And little by little, work out ways in which the person involved gets to choose. When you get out from under that oppression, and the person has to deal with the reality isn't going to go away. But as much as possible, we are human to the extent that we have a chance to make choices about how and where we're going to live. And even if the choices get very much narrowed down, nevertheless, preserving as much of that decision-making as possible is something that I hope I have a chance to do until the last breath I have. And my guess is that that's true for all of us.
I am a very independent person. I always have been, and I haven't lost one bit of that yet. I don't intend to.
Depends on your income.
Yeah, yes, and certainly our choices really go down as our income goes down, and old people find that out dreadfully. But nevertheless, there probably are, in most cases, some possibility of choosing your destiny rather than just have it glommed onto you. One last shot, and then I'm going to move on.
Would it be kind of a wise idea, maybe, or friends, that parents and our children and parents, older, younger, whatever, that once in a while some of these people who are living in these experiences would come and speak, even like at our church groups, and give a satisfied customer reply rather than, and maybe instead of all the negative, and everybody hears the same thing, maybe first, we know people are going through guilt things like you can't believe, and their parents are because they're putting this on them, and they're going back and forth, and maybe if they would hear from the people who are there, I too worked in a nursing home and had that total experience, and gee whiz, it seems to me maybe that sharing would really be a great way to help a lot of people.
A big point here is that this is an untapped ministry of the church, a ministry by old people, first of all, for old people, to old people, to the rest of us, that this whole area of the aged is a place for us to lighten the darkness, as it were, to take on, look at the reality of the situation, that growing old is part of all of our stories, but that there's plenty of, but that's an opportunity for ministry by us and for us all. And that there's a whole educational process that all of us can go back home and get involved in one way or another. One of the things that I've, in my 2 weeks that I have here yet, I'll be doing a lot of this. I brought four films on aging. Maybe we'll get a chance to see a fragment of this one here, and so on. As a kind of begin to wrap this up, I just want to pick up some of these quotations from Country Beautiful. Again, this time about the images of the aged or aging experience. From John Greenleaf Whittier, "How strange it seems, with so much gone of life and love, to still live on." Or from J.G. Saxe, "I'm growing fonder of my staff. I'm growing dimmer in the eyes. I'm growing fainter in my laugh. I'm growing deeper in my sighs. I'm growing careless of my dress. I'm growing frugal of my gold. I'm growing wise. I'm growing, yes, I'm growing old. It is not the end of joy that makes old age so sad, but the end of hope," from Titian. "We do not count a man's years until he has nothing else to count," Ralph Waldo Emerson. "Give me your hand by these gray waters, the day is ending. Already the first faint star pierces the veil of heaven. Oh, the long way we two have come in joy together to these gray shores and quiet waters, and the day is ending. The day is ending, the journey is ended. Give me your hand." That's from John Hall Wheelock, called "Tell Us." "People expect old men to die. They do not really mourn old men. Old men are different. People look at them with eyes that wonder when. People watch with unshocked eyes. But the old men know when an old man dies." Old Men, from Ogden, by Ogden Nash. This is called "Sermon in an Almshouse," by Theodosia Garrison. "The good man talked to her of high and holy things. He left her mind a tumult of trumpets, crowns, and wings. He talked to her of heaven. And all she saw the while were two arms waiting and an unforgotten smile and a neat white cottage with lilacs by the door and the blue plates shining and the sun across the door and an old clock ticking the happy hour to come when the little gate opened and her man came home. When she gets to heaven, there's nothing she will miss. When she finds her heaven, it will be like this." "It gives me great pleasure to converse with the aged. They have been over the road that all of us must travel and know where it is rough and difficult and where it is level and easy." Plato. "Old age has a great sense of common freedom. When the passions have relaxed their hold, you have escaped not from one master, but from many." Also from Plato. "One capital advantage of old age is the absolute insignificance of a success, of more or less. I went to town and read a lecture yesterday. 30 years ago, it had really been a matter of importance to me whether it is good and effective. Now it is of none in relation to me. It is long already fixed what I can do and what I cannot do." Ralph Waldo Emerson. Oscar Wilde said, "The tragedy of old age is not that one is old, but that one is young." "For the unlearned, old age is winter. For the learned, from the learned, it is a season of the harvest." Bernard Baruch said, "To me, old age is always 15 years older than I am." "91st birthday, Oliver Wendell Holmes. The riders in a race do not stop short when they reach the goal. There's a little standing canter before coming to a standstill. There is time to hear the kind voice of friends and to say to oneself, the work is done. And then from John Masefield on growing old. Be with me, beauty, for the fire is dying. My dog and I are old, too old for roving. Man, whose young passion sets the spindrift flying, is soon too lame to march, too cold for loving. I take the book and gather to the fire, turning old yellow leaves minute by minute. The clock ticks to my heart, a withered wire moves a thin ghost of music in the spinet. I cannot sail your seas, I cannot wander your corn land, nor your hill land, nor your valleys ever again, nor share the battle yonder, where the young knight, the broken squadron, rallies. Only stay quiet while my mind remembers the beauty of fire from the beauty of embers. No wonder we do not lose heart. Though our outward humanity is in decay, yet day by day we are inwardly renewed. Our troubles are slight and short-lived, and their outcome an eternal glory which outweighs them far. Meanwhile, our eyes are fixed not on the things that are seen, but on the things that are unseen. For what is seen passes away. What is unseen is eternal. For we know that if the earthly frame that houses us today should be demolished, we possess a building which God has provided, a house not made by human hands, eternal and in heaven. In this present body we do indeed groan. We yearn to have our heavenly habitation put on over this one, in the hope that being thus clothed, we shall not find ourselves naked. We groan indeed, we who are enclosed within this earthly frame. We are oppressed because we do not want to have the old body stripped off. Rather, our desire is to have the new body put on over it, so that our mortal part may be absorbed into life immortal. God himself has shaped us for this very end, and as a pledge of it, he has given us the Spirit. I like the image of the beauty of embers. You can watch that roaring fire there and see all this yellow flame, the roar, and some blue sparks, and lots of smoke going up the chimney, lots of waste energy, youth, you know. It'd really be great if we, all of us who know better, finally would still have all that youthful energy. But by the time we know how great it was to have all that energy, we've gone too far. But hang in there. Because when you're down to that last log, and you look inside it, and it's sort of a solid red-bluish glow, and if you look at it, it looks like it's no longer burning on wood at all. It's burning on itself. It's spiritual. It has learned to live without a lot of things and still discover what at the very center of it all. That's my image of what integrity is, what wisdom is, what the outcome of all these round and downs and up and downs of life may be.